The following seminar was recorded live at the 2003 USPTA World Conference on Tennis in Hollywood, Florida.
I'm happy to introduce to you a person I've known for a long time, one of the most industrious tennis pros I've ever known, and one of the most entertaining people to be with. This is Bruce Levine. He's from New Haven, Connecticut. He's the owner of Tennis Central and was a founder of Tennis Central, a five-court facility in Woodbridge, Connecticut, and he was director of tennis operations at the Woodbridge Club. He's a technical advisor for rackets for Tennis Magazine. In addition, he's a varsity tennis coach for Amity Regional High School. He's a member of the board of directors of the Connecticut Association of Club Owners and has served on the board of directors for the New Haven Grassroots Tennis Program. He was also this year a speaker at the New England USPTA convention. I'm happy to introduce you, Bruce Levine.
Thank you, Spike. You told me you weren't going to read that whole thing. Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you for getting up so early. It's not my fault, honest. I think Fred's the one that scheduled this so early. Anyhow, I just want to talk to you for a little while and give you a chance to ask questions about how we do things at Tennis Magazine so that when you get the magazine and the issue that talks about racket reviews, you'll have a little bit more tangibility to it. I'm the guy that does all the reviews. I am the worst potential writer on the planet. So the guy who writes for me is named James Martin. So when you see the article, it's James's name. What we do is we get all our rackets totally blacked out. And the reason we do that is that we have 60 testers who all have their own rackets. Some play with Prince, some play with Wilson, some play with Head, Yonex, Vocal, the whole rigmarole. If I forgot any manufacturers, shoot me. But they all have an allegiance. So when they get a racket like this, they say, what is it? Our answer is very simple. If I tell you, I'd have to kill you. So there's no allegiance and there's no brand loyalty when it comes to the racket. Mrs. Smith comes, picks it up, plays with it. She fills out a review with about 8 or 10 questions on it, as does her husband. We get the reviews, we'll sit down, we read the reviews that they've written. Then I go out and I hit with every single racket with a hitting partner. I sit down with James. He says to me, what did you think? I give him the answer. He writes what I've said. Then we compare the two. Any glaring differences will be sent. The rackets will come back. We'll test them again. We'll ask some consumers to test them. I'll test them again. And it's not been unheard of that we would send a racket back to a manufacturer and say, something's wrong with this. Send us 2 or 3 more. Because believe it or not, when they come off the press, every racket is different. It's very difficult for you to get 2 identical rackets without some customization done to it. And then the magazine will write the article. We pick an editor's choice. And believe it or not, an editor's choice can push a racket from anywhere on the chart up into the top 5 selling rackets in the world, which is kind of amazing. I find it hard to believe. My wife finds it hard to believe that I have that much effect on anything. So just so you know how we do it. More importantly for you as teaching pros and people in the industry, what do you do with the rackets when they come in the store? And how do you sell the rackets? And how do you merchandise the stuff? And how do you match a customer to a racket? Okay? And we find that there's been, much to my surprise, a lot of interest in this. So the magazine ships my butt all over the country, and we do these things called demo days about 10 or 12 times a year all over the country where we bring all the manufacturers together who advertise above a certain dollar value, of course, and they go on the courts, and we talk to retailers as well as the public over a 2 or 3 day period. So anyway, if you didn't get one of these handouts, just so you have it, and I'm going to go buy it just as well as you're going to. Okay, what are they looking for? I'm always amazed when I go into a retail outlet somewhere and a 65-year-old woman who we affectionately love and call Mrs. Blivitz goes in, and the guy in the retail section of the tennis racket department is selling her one of these. Okay? I said, pal, your wife need a new car? She getting a new mink coat? What's the deal? Mrs. Blivitz isn't going to use this any more than my mother's going to use this thing. It ain't happening. So you need to know a little bit about what your customer wants and what your customer needs. Okay? Some generalities about what your customers need. The longer the swing, the faster the swing, generally speaking, and again, very, very generally, the thinner we want to sell the beam to the person. Because inherently that has less power is going to yield the hitter a greater opportunity to take a full swing and still control the ball. Whereas, again, my buddy Mrs. Blivitz, who has a swing that's 6 inches long and goes 2 miles an hour, is looking for something that's got a much wider beam so she can put the racket down and say, give me some juice, please. And she gets it. Okay? Generalities. So you need to know that. The first thing is you got to look at the consumer. Look at them when they walk in the door. If the guy's built like me, 25 pounds, 50 pounds overweight, doesn't look like he's run in 6 months, say, hey, how do you play? Are you a 4-5, you a 5-0, or are you a 2-0? Let me see you take a swing. Look at that. It's pretty obvious. It's going to gear you in the right direction. Having said that, each manufacturer will make something for every player, or so they will tell you. So you want to sort of say, okay, here's the section of the wall that you should be looking at. And there's a million and one things that play in effect. Women, and I'm not picking on women at all. Color is important to you guys. I could care less what my racket looks like. My wife says, where's the red one? I don't know where the red one is. But if color is important, make sure you look at that with them. Okay? Their size and their stature and their strength. Go to weight. Okay? Somebody who's very small in stature is not going to be able to play with a very heavy racket. I mean, this is all logical stuff, but again, going into retail outlets, it's amazing. Level of ability. We need to know that. You need to know that. Don't sell a racket to a 3-0 that's built for a 5-0, but do sell a racket to a 3-0 that's built for a 3-5. Why? Because that person's going to come back and thank you. You're going to force that person to play up a little bit, but you need to explain that when you sell a racket to the person. One of the things we're trying very hard to do now is say, if I play with X, what's my next racket meant to be? Okay? So if I'm playing with this, the new liquid metal 4-0, okay, what would my next racket be? Well, we're hoping that your next racket's going to be something along the lines of this, a thinner beam, a little bit more flex, going to allow you more swing. But if I sell you this, what are you going to come back and say to me? That racket sucks. I can't use that. Why not? Well, my swing's too short. Okay, guess what? Call the local pro and say, hey, Tom, get Mrs. Blivitz to take a longer swing. She's going to love this racket. You're going to make her a better player. You're going to make him a happier pro because he's going to sell another racket. And the whole thing's going to start to get tied together. So we're trying much harder now to lead people into, here's something that's going to force you to play better versus you can play with this and you're going to play like that till they put you in the ground. Okay? Know that or try to know that. Price range. You can't go buy a Porsche on a Chevrolet budget. Simply said. If you're going to, somebody comes in and the first question they say to you is, how much is the racket? Go to the lower end. Don't go to the $350 whatever. The consumer's going to walk out the door. Prices are starting to drop. The average price of the racket is down, according to TIA and all industry standards. So you need to be aware of that. People are looking for a deal. The economy isn't so great. It's not as awful as it once was, but again, I don't think it's so great. So you have to be conscious in terms of price. And also, how many rackets are you selling somebody? We have juniors that come in and buy 4 rackets at a clip. We're going to cover that kid a little bit. Rather than whole retail, maybe we knock it down a little bit. But you're selling 4 instead of 1. So those are some things you need to pay attention to. The selling shtick, know the consumer. Again, try as much as you can. It's not easy all the time, but the more you know your consumer, the better off you're going to be. We keep index cards on who's bought what they like, what programs they're in at our club, et cetera, et cetera. As we get new rackets and as we do testing, it allows us to say, you know, Ellen, here's a racket that you might like. We think it's good for a 3-5 to 4-5 player. You might really love this. Try it. That works. Display stuff on the wall and say, here's new stuff coming. You guys see it just as early as everybody else except for me. Okay, I've seen rackets now that are coming out for next March. But you'll see them 2 months or 3 months before everybody else sees them. Get the demos, put the demos on the wall. Give your customers an incentive to try. Say, here's a can of balls. Go try the new racket. Here's some walk-on court time. Go try a new racket. You hook them. You got to hook them a little bit. Okay? You're not ripping them off. You're giving them something that's going to help them play the game better, but you're piquing their interest. You're keeping track of what they're doing. You know what programs they're in. And I guarantee you, when Mrs. Blivitz walks on the court with a new racket and beats out the crap out of Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Smith is in the door looking for another racket to say, what does Mrs. Blivitz have? I need that. Okay? It's not a pill at the pharmacy. It's a new racket. Is it helping her game? We don't know. We hope. But it's going to increase your sales, which is what this part of the business is about. Okay. Life of the frame. Yes?
How much information do you track with that?
We track all their information on a little card. Everything they do at the club. We also run a computer system. All our courts are booked on a computer. So we know what lessons they've taken, how often they take lessons, et cetera, by a weekly report that we run. But more importantly is what level leagues they're in, what level round robins they're in, who their general playing partner is, so that we can sort of guide ourselves that way. The life of the racket is an interesting question. Does anybody have any idea how long a racket lasts?
Too long.
Not according to the consumers. Until Junior throws it. Rackets, you can probably get 5 to 6 years out of a racket if you're playing once a week. The more you play, of course, the less it's going to live. But really, the answer to that question is until the next generation of that racket starts to come out. And the question we see every city we go to, every major market is, how come they stop making the racket so fast? What do I do about that? Okay? We tell the consumers, you hear that the racket's going to start to go out, buy yourself 3 or 4. Because they're not going to make it again. The price goes down. The rackets are going out the door. The manufacturer doesn't want any more in the warehouse. What do? The iRadical. You know what you pay for an iRadical today? $45. You're paying $200 for, not an iRadical, I'm sorry, a TiRadical. Okay? We still have a lot of real good kids and some adults playing with that racket. People will buy 3 and 4 at a clip. It's going away. I don't want to be without it. What do? Buy a bunch. Let your consumers and your customers know about that. Say, hey, they're discontinuing this racket. First of all, they appreciate you for letting them know that. Second of all, we're having a sale. The rackets are going for $45 a pop. How many should I get you? You want to sell 4 rackets in 10 minutes? Yeah, you do, don't you? Sure. Talk to them that way. Let them know. Be their friend in that department. Don't just look at them as a dollar sign. Be their friend. Let them know what's out there. Let them know what's happening, and you're going to find they'll keep coming back to you. If you're a source of information and you're a helpful source of information, that customer is going to come again and again and again. And the next time there's a question about a racket or they see something new in a magazine, my magazine, they're going to come and ask you, what's this? And you're now the official source. Okay? So the lifetime of the racket. The racket's going to start to get soft, even with the new materials and, you know, the Arnold stuff and Terminator and all that. That stuff's going to get soft. Somebody's playing 5 days a week, year and a half, 2 years max. You can tell your customer if they've had the racket restrung and the racket still feels like mush, it's time. Okay? Okay. What does beam with mean other than power? Stiffness. Okay? A thick beam has no choice but to be stiff. So you have to be aware of that. So when you start to sell somebody a racket and they say, you know, my elbow's killing me, be careful. You might, again, we go back to my buddy Mrs. Blivitz. The beam width needs to be big for her to get their ball relatively, you know, deep enough in the court, past the service line. However, there has to be some comfort factors put into the racket so that she's not going to, you know, help her tennis elbow get worse. Vibration dampeners, power holes, catapult, stuff like that. Okay? So beam width is important for stiffness, and it helps let the ball go, but you need to, on the other side of things, watch out for tennis elbow. Swing weight. This is one of my favorite topics because I have a very good time with people in swing weight. What is swing weight? Anybody know? Come on. It's worth a beer at the bar tonight. What's swing weight? Okay, everybody here has to buy me a beer and put me on the plane at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. Swing weight is the weight of the racket when you play with it. When I pick a racket up off the shelf, that's what we call pickup weight. Swing weight is the way the racket plays as I swing it. Okay? I play with my racket as almost 15 ounces. I am not quite that strong. But it's evenly balanced, so the swing weight is not real, real high. This racket, which you can say what you want about it, it's pretty whacked out looking, but our testers sort of liked it, has a very high swing weight. Why? All the weight is up in the tip of the head, a la Wilson Hammer. There's a few Vocal frames, a few Yonex frames that have that, where a lot of weight's in the head. The swing weight on that is going to be very heavy, and it's going to feel like this. This racket probably weighs 9 ounces, but if the swing weight is 310 or 320, it's going to feel like this. And this racket is for whom? Not this racket, but a racket with a heavy swing weight. Our good friend, Mrs. Blivitz, because she wants to get the racket going, let it finish itself, and call it a day, and take it back again to do the same thing. And when she goes in the store and she picks it up off the shelf, and it goes like this, wow, that's light. You betcha, it's really, really light. Yeah, it's great. Okay, go out and swing it. Okay, problem. Maybe, okay? But you need to know about swing weights. A racket that has an even balance is going to be for a more advanced player because they're going to want to generate the power. The head's not going to do it itself. They're going to make the head of the racket go through. And the higher up you get, when you get to the tour, you find that a lot of players have weight that's more in the handle and the racket is butt heavy. But that's swing weight. A racket with a butt heavy swing weight is going to be low, maybe in the 200s. That's going to increase what? Low swing weight. Maneuverability. So I'm selling that racket to a guy who serves in volleys or a woman who serves in volleys. This, if I sell it to a serving volleyer, they're going to come back and shove it in my face. Can't move that racket when I'm at the net. See the bullet hole? See the bullet hole? I was fortunate. I spent a year and a half with Yvonne Lendl at one point as a quote-unquote assistant coach and club director. And I'll never forget that we were testing rackets for Yvonne, and he was playing with about 17 ounces, some frame made by Adidas, and we're trying to get him to go to an oversized thing. We did a little work at the vertical club one day, and Yvonne hit a forehand that I still have the number of the ball right here because I was using a racket that was too big to pick up. And Yvonne did call me the next day and said, could you tell me what number was that ball? I said, how would I know? He said, you might want to look at your chest. So the heavier the swing weight, generally the more weight is in the head. We're going to sell that racket again to an older person or a shorter swing or somebody who's only playing generally baseline tennis. Or primarily baseline tennis. Somebody who's a serving volleyer or a running gunner, they're gonna want a racket that's even balanced or even head light. Okay? But swing weight's an important issue. Tell your consumer when they pick it up off the shelf, this is not the only weight that's important. How does it feel when you hold it like this? Heavy swing weight is also gonna tend to yield a little bit towards tennis elbow if somebody takes a pretty good cut at the ball. Because the head of that racket's going to be hanging down and it's going to be tough. So you got to watch out for that. We talked about the general weight of the frame. Okay, buzzwords. This is amazing. When we do these demo days and we go around the country and we speak to 30 retailers, 50 retailers at a clip, and the guy from Prince and the guy from Wilson and the guy from Head, Yonex, and Vocal are all in the room and Babolat. And we say to the retailers, what are the buzzwords in the industry today? And nobody knows. That's a problem. Does anybody here know buzzwords? What are buzzwords? Come on. What's this? Liquid metal. That's a buzzword. Okay? Titanium was a buzzword. IntelliFiber's a buzzword. Wilson has IsoGrid, a buzzword. Babolat has woofer, a buzzword. You need to know these words to sell the rackets. Because when somebody comes in looking for a racket and you say, well, this racket has this stuff over here and that stuff over here, not very impressive. You're the expert. You're the end-all and be-all in their minds. You need to know what the buzzwords are. So you should learn those to the best of your abilities. Okay? And you need to know what they mean. You don't need to write a dictionary definition of them. But when somebody comes in and says to me, talk to me about liquid metal, I need to be able to say liquid metal is a substance that has a different molecular structure, absorbs the power, and returns the power in a much greater fashion than traditional molecular structure built in a racket. What does IntelliFiber do? IntelliFiber is a fiber that reacts relative to the impression that the ball gives. The amount of pace and the amount of power applied to the racket is going to be returned, and the fibers are going to stiffen up. They're smart fibers. It's very simple. Not unlike helicopter rotors. Okay? The harder the rotor goes around, the stiffer the helicopter rotor gets. You know what? The helicopter goes up. IsoGrid. What does IsoGrid do? IsoGrid will create a more torque-reducing situation in a racket so that it creates a good sense of stability, not unlike Intelligence X. What does Catapult do? Catapult catches the ball and kicks it back out. What does that mean in terms of a consumer or a hitter? That means I have a long dwell time. What's dwell time?
Time on the strings.
Time on the strings, absolutely. Is it good or bad?
Good.
You want to control the ball? It's damn good. Okay? But Catapult is going to increase the dwell time and give a large amount of kick coming out of the racket. Is that good or bad? Depends on the hitter. Somebody who needs help getting that ball with some depth, Catapult is a good thing. Okay, now it's not called Super Catapult, but there's Extra Catapult. I forget what it's called. We just did the test and they actually aren't so bad. Okay? But all those buzzwords are critical to you selling a racket to a consumer and letting a consumer understand that you do know what's going on out there and that you are the expert here. They don't need to send me the email that I get. They should talk to you. So you need to know the buzzwords. The industry buzz. Right now, I'm going to tell you that the level of dollars that are being spent in this industry is south. Big time south. I will tell you that heads numbers alone are down in big box stores, meaning Garth, Sports Authority, et cetera, for quarter one compared to last year. Quarter one in 2003 to quarter one in 2002. Ball sales are down, I'm going to say, 18%. That's a big number. A big, big number. Okay? Racket sales are down, like, 10% in units. Another big number. Okay? So the industry needs help, and we're the ones that have to help it. We have to help it in the door of the store as well as out on the court. So you need to know what's going on in the industry. You need to know your buzzwords. You need to try to help the consumers get out there and understand what's in, you know, what the rackets are doing today. Okay. I always get asked the question, when do I switch rackets? And I refer to, well, my kid's going to a very expensive private school. I think today's a good day. When do you change rackets? When your game improves, or when you're trying to improve your game, when the frame has said adios, when new technology comes to help you improve, and I'll go back to something I talked about earlier, when Mrs. Blivitz beats Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Smith says it's time for a new racket. It's definitely today is the day for the new racket. Okay? Or Mr. Jones beats Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown's coming in the store saying, I beat this guy 5 times. He's got a new racket. What's he using? He just kicked my butt. I need a new racket. Those are times when you can begin to start to sell new frames. Again, I would urge you that when new technology comes, you put it somewhere where your customer can see it and say, here, try this. I don't care if you're looking or not. Try it. I'd like to get your feedback. I see 350 to 400 rackets a year, all black. There's not a day that doesn't go by that we don't leave those rackets on a rack out front that one or two people every hour to hour and a half say, can I try something new? Absolutely. Be my guest. Or, we just got this in. Would you try it? Who do you know that's not willing? Everybody's going to try. Let them try. Get their feedback. Say, hey, what did you think? It's going to help you market what you have on the walls in your store better, and it's going to allow you to get in touch with your consumer. Anytime you can talk to them, you potentially go forward with them. You create a better relationship. Yes?
How does the fact that a lot of times those testing rackets come with a grip which is, you know, maybe very small, the type of string is prefixed?
you should control the type of string, and I'll get into that in a little bit. In terms of, go ahead, I'm sorry to cut you off, go ahead.
I mean, the point is that testing may be very unlike and have a big impact on how the person's actually going to play.
In terms of the grip, you can alter the size of the grip with an overgrip to the best of your ability. You know somebody who's playing with a 4 5/8, and the only test racket you have is a 4 1/4, guess what? Don't give them that 4 1/4. Don't do it. They're going to get tennis pain, elbow pain, and they're going to walk out and say, that racket really sucked. Conversely, the lady with the little tiny hand, you're not going to hand her a 4 5/8. So you may either need to call the manufacturer and say, hey, you got to do something with me for this, with this racket for grip sizes, or you have to alert the consumer and say, look, I'll get you something to try, or say, here, this racket is small, the grip is small. However, you know, I'm curious to hear how you feel the racket plays. That's all I can tell you about that. I forget where I was now. What was I talking about?
Upgrading,
yes. So, go ahead.
What about the role of, you were talking earlier, the deterioration of the frame?
Yep.
Do you do any testing for that? Or
I don't know that there's a way to test, perfectly honestly. We use an RDC machine, which is made by Babolat, which tests everything from, you know, how the racket's going to react to toilet paper, to how stiff the string bed is, and how stiff the frame bed is, and what the RA is, and all this other stuff, which really doesn't mean jack if you give it to a consumer and they say this racket's great or this racket's awful.
Well, you said if you restring it, they said, well, still.
Right. Generally, we get people that will come in and say, you know, I really love my racket, but the strings must be dying or something because it feels all mushy. I'm not getting any power.
That's the type of player you say that plays maybe 5 times a week.
Well, it doesn't have to be. It could be, again, Mrs. Blivitz, whose racket's 25 years old, again, which is not uncommon. And she comes in and says, okay, my racket feels awful. Restring this for me. I restring the lady's racket. She goes back out and she plays. Still feels awful. You know what? Odds are pretty good. That's time. You should take it out for a test run yourself also. It's not uncommon for us to do that. But generally, the frame will soften based on age and amount of use. Those two are the two big factors.
Because those players, they don't know that.
Right.
I don't think they think those frames, today's frames, last forever.
Yeah. They don't. And I think maybe that's a conversation you could have with some of them, especially when you sell the racket and you say, you know, here it is, and, you know, when you bring it back to restring, here's the tension I strung it at, and just so you know, this is the lifespan of this frame is X amount of hours, something along those lines. And that you'd have to figure based, again, on your consumer. Okay.
But because you're running the computer software at your club, you can say you've been using this racket for 50 hours or 250
right.
hours. You're getting close to the lifespan of that.
Yes.
Plus the string time.
Rather than be proactive that way, I would almost wait because now it looks like I'm trying to go out and say, okay, I got to sell you another racket. I'd wait for them to come to me. But once that happens, I would push the button on the computer and say, all right, how long has Johnny used this racket for? Oh, he's been using it for 2 years, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. This racket's got to be
right.
feeling
so
awful.
You don't think racket manufacturers are going to be opposed to, at point of sale, talking about the deterioration of the frame within a given period?
All right, I'm going to tell you something. I care what the racket manufacturers say, but I really don't give a flying hoot. My job as the guy for Tennis Magazine is to be honest. And I think you as a retailer have to be honest. If I go to my consumer and say, look, this racket is great. If it's not a great racket, they're going to come back and say, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. This is junk. Or I think this is the right racket for you. Conversely, if I go in a positive fashion and they walk away happy, it's my job to let my consumer know what's going on and to be fair to the consumer. I don't think you have to say, look, you're going to keep this racket for 6 months, it's going to die. But, you know, in a year, make sure if the racket's starting to feel bad, bring it back, let's take a look. I think you got to let them know that the material does deteriorate. I mean, there's no way, ifs, ands, or buts about it. To that end, I will tell you that when we do reviews, if we get a racket that really is a piece of junk, we won't review it. So if you have a racket that somebody's come to try to sell you, and you go through the gear guide and you say, geez, they didn't review this racket, beware. If we didn't review it, one of two things happened. Either we didn't get it, a la the Babolat Arrow. Has anybody seen that racket? The aliens are alive and well. Okay? And I don't know how well or poor the racket plays, but we didn't get it for a reason. I don't think they wanted us to review it. Or if the racket's out and it hasn't been reviewed and you haven't seen it, odds are pretty good it wasn't worth a review. We only get so much space to review rackets, so many pages. And almost every issue We do reviews. So if you know, you can go back and have a look. There's a lot in there. If it's not reviewed, buyer beware. Again, where was I?
At the bottom of upgrades.
This guy's hired. The bottom of upgrades. Okay, what do I replace it with? Okay, what do you replace with? If I'm playing with A, what do I replace A with?
A plus.
Not necessarily. Okay, you want to look for something that's similar, and I can't answer the question exactly. There is no precise answer to that question. All I would tell you is look for something that's similar in weight and balance and beam width. String bed, string pattern. That's going to make your consumer happiest. Again, I prevent that with, here's what's coming. These are going out. If you love this racket, please look for more or come and get some more. Okay, a little bit about string. First of all, string is a huge revenue maker. It's inexpensive. You get paid for stringing it. It takes you very little time, or your stringer very little time to string it. You're not paying the stringers too much money generally, unless you're using Warren Bosworth. Okay? It's a huge revenue maker. It also has a huge difference in how the frame plays, going back to this gentleman's question. Okay? First of all, tension. The higher the tension, the stiffer the frame, or the stiffer the string bed. The stiffer the frame, you got to be careful with the tension. Because a stiff frame and a stiff string bed yield what? Tennis elbow. If you're not an orthopedic guy, it's not a great place to be. So if you have a very stiff frame, we tend to recommend that you string down a little bit. Not so much off the manufacturer's recommendation, but don't go up to 65 on a frame like this. It's going to hurt. It's just going to hurt. Anytime you miss, it's going to be glaringly apparent. Ask me, I'll tell you. Okay?
Well, you have some of these racket manufacturers saying, well, like you were talking about this catapult technology, with that technology, the ball's supposed to stay on the strings longer. Would that tend to help tennis elbow on a stiff frame?
The catapult technology? Yes, a little bit. I mean, you definitely are going to have to string up if the dwell time is too great. Okay? But conversely, again, going back to what he's just arose brought up, excuse me, if you have a softer frame, you don't want to string down because you won't get any power. It'll feel like mush. So the softer the frame, the higher you can string the tension to a certain degree. The stiffer the frame, the lower you want to string the tension to a certain degree. And again, going back to head size, a huge head, you need to string tighter than you do a mid-size head to get the desired result. Quality of string. This is a huge issue in my house, in my club. We try to sell people good stuff. Not because we're making money, but because we get customer satisfaction. We have a fair number of people playing with gut. Why? Because it plays great. Is it expensive? Yeah. But if you're in a market where people can afford it, they'll buy it. Let them try it once. Convince them to use it once. They'll never go back to anything else. I guarantee you. Okay? The next step down are the strings that are the high end of all the manufacturers. The Gamma Live Wires, the Wilson Sensation NXTs, the Head Fiber Gel, the Babolat, I forget what it's called. The XL, I think, is the one. Syntronic's better? Okay. There's a tip, gang. From the back of the room, Syntronic. Okay? That's what you want to try to get your consumer to use. They're going to walk away happier, and it's only going to cost them 10 or 12 bucks more. What's the big deal?
Especially when you pay $180, $200 for a racket.
Yeah. Right. It's like buying a Cadillac and saying, or a Porsche and saying, okay, I'm going to put low-test fuel in it. Don't do that. Not that I drive a Porsche, but I do put the low-test fuel in my car. All right, so you want to sell good string, and you want to talk to your consumers about that and get them to understand that it's worth their nickel. Your demos, you should string your demos with good stuff. You're spending 35, 40 bucks to put the string in, or 15 bucks to put the string in, whatever it is. You want to sell the rackets. Put good string in there. They're going to enjoy it, okay, and you'll get more sales from it. Durability. This is a huge one with the juniors and even some of our better men. and with some of the stuff we test. There's a string out there called Luxilon, and I've never tried it. But every professional player that I talk to, and I talk to a fair amount, will tell you that Luxilon is the string of choice. It's more durable than gut. It has pretty good feel. The amount of spin you can put on the ball is totally amazing. Okay? I don't know that everybody can get Luxilon, but that's a hybrid that is now really, really popular. So you want to look for your kids and your big hitters and your string breakers to strings that are going to do stuff like that. Okay, the head string is good. Luxilon. That's the name of the company. You know as much as I know. I'm supposedly getting some. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't answer that question. I'm sure if you you look in the back of the magazine, all those guys have Luxilon. Our friends, our good buddy Don at Tennis Warehouse, I'm sure he's got Luxilon. Yeah, but it's not a hybrid. I was under the impression it was a hybrid.
I don't think it is.
No?
Generally, most people will do make it into a hybrid. You do, like, synthetic gut.
Yeah.
And just try atsports.com.
Atsports.com.
It's amazing.
It is. You love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once in a while, but it's good stuff.
Okay. So durability. You want to sell string to the juniors and the big hitters so that they get some durability in the string. Okay, there's one more thing I want to talk about, and this is a message that I deliver all around the country every chance I get to, because I love the tennis industry. I'm a 46-year-old guy who's done nothing but tennis in his working world. I've been around the globe 3 times full-time. I own a tennis club. I have 3 little kids who eat off my tennis club, a lovely wife who eats off my tennis club, a decent home, yada, yada. The tennis industry is my lifeblood. And as I look at what goes on with the numbers, and I see how things are going in the industry, I have a plea to every single one of you. Work together. Work together. Because I own a club doesn't mean that I don't let the pro from across town come over and see the drills that we do or the programs that we offer or do interclubs with him or her, et cetera, et cetera. Because the more I share, the more people are going to play tennis. And the more people are going to play tennis, the better the industry is going to be. And I got to tell you, I'm scared to death that if this industry goes away, I'm flipping burgers at McDonald's, no matter how good a speaker or how funny I am. You all have to work together. You can't look and say, this is my club, this is my market, nobody comes in. Because you will never grow, the industry will never grow, and we're all in trouble. You're here because you love tennis, I have to believe. No one put a gun to your head and said, go to this convention down at the Diplomat and spend $1,000 for the week. Nobody. Okay? You gotta not be afraid that the guy next door is gonna steal what you do. I come and I make this presentation. What's gonna stop you from going back to your club and making the same presentation? Nothing. Is it gonna have the same clout that I give? Absolutely not. It's the same way with a drill on the tennis court or teaching a lesson. Someone's gonna see what you do and they say, hey, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Let them go and do it. They're not going to deliver it the same way you do. You have your own style, your own touch, your own feel. Your customers, your lessons, your clients, whatever you want to call them, know you and love you. But by being involved with other pros and other clubs, you create new ideas, new programs, new information. You might learn something, believe it or not. I go to 25 or 30 clubs a year. And there's not one club, and I was telling this to Spike last night, that I don't stop and watch what goes on the lesson court. I'm a damn good teacher. I spent 1.5 years with Yvonne Lendl. I gotta know what I'm talking about. But when I walk in the door of a new club, I go over to the court window and I watch and say, what are they doing here? And I might see a drill. And I take that drill home and I say to my staff, which is also a pretty good teaching staff. We've got a couple of touring guys that used to be touring pros, a couple of grandpas, a couple of moms. Guys, here's a drill I saw. What can we do to adapt this? And my wife will do the drill, and she'll do it very different than I do it, but the impact is the same, or the result is similar. Happy people. That's what our job is. But I urge you to try to work together and look down the road and see the big picture in the industry and say, okay, what can we do to keep this alive and make it fun and enjoy it? How many people do you know that get to go to work in short pants and a short sleeve shirt 360 days a year? Other than the gang that's here at this convention, not too many. maybe some bartenders in the Caribbean, which ain't a bad choice. But I don't want to have to do that till the time comes. Okay? So I urge you to do things that are positive for the tennis industry and not be afraid of your neighborly pros. Do things that get you involved. And the other thing is get involved in the community, because the community is going to send people to your club, and it's going to make you look good, and it's going to also help you. And I thank you very much for getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And are there any questions?
Going back to string, how many string jobs does it take before the racket pretty much is dead?
Again, it's going to depend on the hitter and how often the hitting is done. But I would say if you're stringing the racket once a month, at the end of a year to 2 year and a half, that racket's getting ready to wave.
What about,
adios.
What about your juniors breaking strings during the season every couple days?
Not going to hurt it. I would say that kid's going to get a good year anyway, even if he's stringing it every couple days.
Repeat the question when they ask a question.
Oh, sorry. I was supposed to repeat that question. The question was about life of the racket with a junior who's breaking strings every couple days. How long is that frame going to stay fresh for, or stay, you know, stay alive? Any other questions?
Did you go over shoulder injuries?
Did I go over shoulder injuries? I didn't, but I will. Okay? This goes back to stiffness of frame and stiffness of string and swing weight. The first thing to go is always going to be the elbow. But technically speaking, if someone's hitting the ball way back here, they're going to run into trouble here. Again, a heavy racket and a heavy frame and a heavy tight string job is going to be a problem. We would recommend that you would ask that person to think about trying a lighter racket and taking a shitload of lessons, pardon my French, so that they get better. Anything else? Thank
you. You see the manufacturers going to longer rackets. They went to long, now they're taking them shorter.
They are taking them shorter. Yeah.
Think they'll go back.
You're not going to see long come back. I don't think so. They've gone like a quarter of an inch, and that's sort of where they've stopped. The trend in rackets, just so you now know, has gone from long and light to back to maybe a quarter of an inch longer. We're getting to a little bit thinner beams, a little bit more mass, because what we found is, or what the consumer's starting to find is, that a light racket doesn't make the ball do what I need it to do. It doesn't get it to go very far. And I can't hit it very hard without taking out the turbo and putting it behind my hand to make the racket go so fast. So they've gone to, again, the swing weight is up a little bit, or is down a little bit, but the pickup weight is up a little bit.
What is the average length racket?
The average length racket, I think, is 27 and a quarter to 27 even. Do I really have to answer that question? He asked me about the Moore technology where there are no grommets in the frame. I think to some respect, and there is one other thing I should talk about, vibration, but let me answer your question first. You get much more feel from what goes on. I think, yes, there's some gimmick to it. And I think it's a knee-jerk reaction to what everybody else in the industry is doing. Head does something, and you have to know that head takes a 3-year jump on everybody, because they came out with titanium, they spent 3 years coming up with IntelliFiber, they came out with IntelliFiber, everybody else comes out with a knee-jerk reaction. After IntelliFiber, they come out with IX, all of a sudden, 3 months later, Wilson comes with something else. And then Babolat, you know, everything is a knee-jerk reaction. And that's what Prince did relative to Head's first stab at IntelliFiber. This is something we're doing to sort of change things and make it look different. But let's talk about vibration just for a minute, because this again is a hot topic. What is good vibration and what is bad vibration? Good vibration is a song by the Beach Boys that they played. I don't know, Spike, you know better than me. Good vibration is information that the strings send back to your hand. It tells you what you've done with the tennis ball. Okay? So is a vibration dampener a great thing or a bad thing? I don't know. It depends on you or your consumer. But string vibration is important. I will go back to the Wilson triad. We got a triad 2-0 to try. I'm going back probably 3 years. I went out and I hit with the racket. I gave the racket to James. I gave the racket to 3 or 4 of our members to try. What do you think? I can't feel a thing. I might as well be sleeping. I cannot feel a thing. Our recommendation to Wilson is, this definitely dampens the vibration. What the hell's going on? So they decrease the durometer, or the width of the material between the frame and the head, and now you start to feel a little better. Concept is great, but practicality becomes the issue. There was no, you weren't getting any message back. It was like walking out of this room with your eyes closed and the lights off. You don't feel anything. So that's important. String vibration. Frame vibration, unless you're an orthopod, is bad news, because that's what's going to cause your elbow problem. And I don't care how many vibration dampeners you put in the racket, frame vibration is going to cause a problem, and it does not go away. So as you test rackets and you recommend them to your consumer, you need to sort of feel where the frame vibration is and string vibration is. All vibration is not bad. And I will tell you a true story that there's a guy that teaches at my club who said to me, take your vibration dampener out. I'm like, no way, I've been using this thing. He says, take it out. For 2 weeks, take it out and try. Forces you to hit the ball cleaner, look at the ball better, pay more attention to what's going on. I will never go back to a vibration dampener, I gotta tell you. That was a year and a half ago that I stopped, and to this day I have not done it. I'm not telling you to do that to consumers because you sell the string vibration dampener. However, you should try it. And maybe some of your, you know, the better players don't need them. Try it. I don't think you see too many of them on the tour. You see some, but not too many. Anything else?
You're talking about racket vibration or frame vibration.
Yes.
All rackets vibrate to a point.
Yes.
And, you know, how much is going to hurt you, I guess, it has to do a lot with mechanics.
It has a lot to do with mechanics, but something that you pick up and you start to swing, and every swing you feel that rattle, that's not good news. And again, I think that's a personal issue. How much are you willing to feel, and how much hurts and how much doesn't, you know? Frames with tennis elbow. The Kennex, the old Kennex frames with the beads, they work. Huh?
The Maracas.
With the Maracas, yes. They work. We've recommended the liquid metal because there's so much vibration dampening material in it. The triad, some of the triads are very good. Anything that's going to decrease the amount of echo that's sent to the elbow. Anything. Catapult's not bad. And we test both with the vibration dampener and without. So we know if you're going to play with a frame without a vibration dampener, how it's going to feel. And some of them make real, real, real bad pingy sounds and pingy feels. And we'll say that in the story. We'll tell them, this thing really pings. It's bad news.
How do you measure frame vibration? I mean, is there a device to...
That's a scientist question. I can't answer that one. How do I measure frame vibration? We don't have a device to do that. That's all done on feel. Just, I think the intensity, he asked, when we talk about frame vibration, what is it, what do we mean? I think it's the intensity. If it's an extremely uncomfortable feel when you pick up and you hit that racket, we're going to talk about that. We're going to say that there is frame vibration here and that, you know, I did feel a lot of vibration, et cetera, et cetera. You know string vibration. You know when you've hit the ball and the hit feels good and you get a little message back from the frame, from the strings. But you also know when this frame doesn't feel good. It's uncomfortable. And that's how it's not a scientific and it's not a big thing. You pick it up, you hit with it, and you say, you know what, this thing really vibrates. I get a lot of echo, vibration, whatever you want to call it, back from this racket, not from the string. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Enjoy the convention.